Welcome to The Pain Puzzle, an educational series to help you understand chronic low back pain and how you can use mind-based therapies to better manage your pain and get back to the life you love. The Pain Puzzle is brought to you by Relio, a science-backed digital program that combines cutting-edge pain science education with the effective power of clinical hypnosis to get to the root cause of your pain. My name is Fiona. I'm a healthcare practitioner who'll be guiding you through this educational series. In this episode, I'll talk about how pain is made, which helps to explain why a lot of current treatment approaches for back pain don't work, and also what we can be doing instead to effectively manage the pain. Let's get started. To understand how pain exists without structural damage, we need to look into how pain is made and controlled by the brain. Now, remember that just because pain is made and controlled by the brain, this doesn't mean it isn't real or that it's all in your head. Before we dive into this topic, it's worth saying that the neurobiology of pain is extremely complex, and it's really hard to do it justice in just one episode. But if you're interested in this topic, NOI Group resources are the gold standard on pain science education, which I'll link in the show notes, alongside a great TED talk with pain expert Laura Mosley. Okay, let's get stuck in. First and foremost, pain acts as a protective mechanism for the body. When there is danger or an injury to heal, your brain generates unpleasant feelings in order to change your behavior. This is pain. In your body's muscles, joints, and skin, there are pain sensors whose job it is to detect and respond to harmful stimuli. There are three different types of pain sensors that exist. These are mechanical sensors, which respond to things like pressure, cutting, or squeezing of the tissue. There are chemical sensors, which respond to chemical changes in the tissues, like the buildup of lactic acid. And finally, there are thermal sensors, which respond to hot or cold temperatures. When these sensors are activated by a stimulus, like if you touch a hot surface, they send a warning signal to the spinal cord. In your spinal cord, you have a gate or a filter that controls the amount of information that comes from your external environment via these sensors and into your brain. So this gate is there to prevent your brain from getting overloaded by the amount it has to process at any one time. A lot of signals aren't threatening, and as a result, they don't need to be sent onward to your brain to alert of any potential danger. If a warning signal makes it through the gates in your spinal cord, though, it will then reach your brain. The brain's job is to make sense of the message based on both the information arriving and a vast amount of stored information, including our prior experiences, environmental context at the time, and things like our mood and emotions. If there's good reason to think that protection is required, then the brain makes pain. This pain will direct you to change your behavior to avoid the danger, like moving your finger away from the hot surface. The longer you experience pain, the better your nervous system, which includes your pain sensors, spinal cord, and brain, get at producing it. This is because the pain system becomes overprotective. In this state, the pain sensors in your muscles, joints, and skin become way more sensitive, and non-threatening movements like sitting, bending, or walking can trigger the sensors, even when there's no danger to your back. The gates in your spinal cord also reduce their ability to open and close effectively, and they let too many messages reach the brain. Because your brain receives so many danger signals, despite the situation being non-threatening, it generates an overprotective response for your body, including pain and muscle tension. Here's an analogy to help explain an overprotective pain system. Imagine there's a fire in your home and the alarm goes off. This is helpful because it's accurately alerting you to a danger that puts you and your home at risk. As the fire is put out and the smoke clears, the alarm should stop. But what if the fire alarm continued to go off, even when there was no more evidence of fire? Or the alarm has become so sensitive that a light breeze could trigger it. This is what happens when you live with chronic pain. Your pain system has become so sensitive that any hint of something that could cause pain triggers a pain response. Okay, let's now look at how the context of our situation can also increase the level of pain you feel. I mentioned before that the brain considers many things when deciding if it needs to send a protective response of pain to the body, including the signals from the senses in our muscles, joints, and skin that have passed through the spinal cord gates, but also stored information from past experiences, the environmental context we're in at the time, and our mood and emotions. If you're in a heightened emotional state, for example, your sensations of pain will be amplified. Here are some examples to demonstrate how the context of a situation at the time and our mood and emotions can contribute to a pain response. First one, pain research has found that the exact same minor finger injury causes more pain in a professional violinist than in a professional dancer. This is because the finger damage poses a greater threat to the violinist. In fact, the injury has been shown to cause more pain if it involves the left hand rather than the right, because this hand is traditionally responsible for fingering the strings. Okay, second example. A research study mapped the prevalence of back pain in response to moderate to severe psychological distress across the United States following the 9/11 terrorist attacks and found a significant correlation between the two. So basically, cases of chronic low back pain increased as national psychological distress increased. And a third and final example, the presence of adverse childhood events, also sometimes known as ACEs, can accurately predict the success of back pain surgery. So researchers have found that the more ACEs someone has, the less likely the surgery will successfully reduce pain. These are just some research-based examples of how our brain considers many inputs when deciding on the level of pain we experience, not just the warning messages coming from our senses and our environment. It's worth thinking about how this applies to your situation and taking a moment to reflect on whether you've noticed your pain changing in different situations. Here are a few questions to consider. Have you noticed any changes in your experience of pain during times of high stress or emotion? Does your pain feel more intense when you're focusing all your attention on the injury, compared to when you're distracted or engaged in other activities? Have you ever experienced greater pain from an injury that significantly impacted your ability to perform your job or daily activities? Can you recall a time when feeling validated and understood by others helped you cope with your pain more effectively? And finally, have you ever noticed that certain environments or situations seem to make your pain feel worse or better? In this episode, we've covered a lot about how pain is made and how most cases of persistent low back pain are due to an oversensitive pain system. We've also talked about how the level of pain we feel is influenced by so much more than the warning signals from our body alone. Now that we understand how pain is made, we can turn our attention to solutions that actually work to address the oversensitive pain system. One of these solutions is clinical hypnosis, which has been shown in research to be highly effective in reducing the sensitivity of the pain system in those with chronic low back pain. But no more spoilers for now. Stay tuned for the next episode where I'll take you through the science of clinical hypnosis and the evidence supporting its effectiveness in chronic pain management. And obviously, it's worth saying now, I promise the clinical hypnosis I'll be speaking about is nothing like the stage shows you've seen on TV. There will be no farm animal performances or brain control happening here. Okay, that's it for now. See you next time.